Welcome to BFF Live. My name is Scott McCulloch. Today we welcome Veronica Maldonado, who is chair of Grupo Economico Maldonado, a privately held concern with activities in diverse areas of industrial investment. She's former executive director of her family office and current president of La Compañía Humana Foundation, which supports philanthropic causes in Venezuela. Veronica has worked in international business development and finance in the United States, Venezuela, and Japan. Graduate of Cornell University, Veronica also holds an EMBA from Kennesaw State University in Atlanta. She's completed the family business program at the Institute of Advanced Studies in Caracas. Veronica is also active in women's forums, next gen issues, and family office spheres. She takes part in conferences worldwide. Veronica is fluent in English, in Spanish, of course, and conversational in Japanese. She's with us now. Veronica, thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, thank you. It's great to be here. Fabulous. Greetings from Lisbon, Portugal.
All right, fantastic. Well, let's jump right in. I want to talk first about your family enterprise. Your family has a unique story. Can you give us a little bit more about the origins of your family business and where you find yourselves today?
Well, I'm a first generation family member. We were based in Venezuela. We were very Venezuelan. My great grandfather started with cattle and land. Then grandfather expanded into dairy, juices, yogurts. Then his children expanded into insurance, banking, real estate. And then my generation added to that and we expanded internationally. However, the Chavez regime and us, we're not best friends. We did not get along so well. And seeing that we did not necessarily cooperate with government, we really got hit really badly. So we decided that it was time for us to expand elsewhere. Thankfully, we had divested in the mid-1990s. So we had been able to save, make some investments abroad, and then we formally moved our family office in 2010, and then the family started transitioning out of Venezuela. 2010, 11, 12, 13, we started what we realize now, looking back, was kind of like this migration, leaving our country, which we thought we would never do. And today, we are restarting again in the United States with an orange juice and grapefruit company called Indian River Select, which we're very proud of. So our generation is starting over.
Terrific. How about yourself? How did you get involved in your family business? What was your first role, for example? Maybe you could tell us a little about your origins.
Well, I was very happy in a non-family business because I had seen that our family council meetings and my my uncles and father and granddad had some, how shall we say, lively discussions. So given that these discussions were very passionate and very lively, I was like, hell no, I'm not going to be a part of that. I'm out of here. So I graduated university and I found a little island in the middle of the Pacific, which I thought was wonderful, Japan. And I thought, nobody in my family knows Japanese. I'm in charge here. So I got a job there in an insurance company that dared hire me, and I was very happy. And then an American company moved me to the United States, and I was happy as a clam in New York City. And I was living between New York and Tokyo in my 20s and living it up. And then my father was like, hello, we have some project here in Venezuela that we think you'd be really good at. And I was like, oh, thank you, bye. And he insisted, and they called me back, and he insisted. It's like, yes, it's a thing called a trust and a family office. And I was like, family what? No, bye. But eventually, they, you know, I was like, okay, let me go check it out. And I went back to Venezuela, and I said, my father's like, this is only for a year. Then you can go do your master's. And I was like, oh, a year, no problem, I can do that. 15 years later, I got my master's. So that's how it started. They hired me to run our family office and to eventually develop that and do all our governance structure. So that was 2002, and I am still here.
Well, considering that you're fourth generation, it sounds as if your family is quite close-knit. Would you say, I mean, what would you say your family's purpose for being in business is? Any thoughts there?
Well, thank you for asking that question. That's a very thoughtful question, which I have asked myself a lot because, as you know, working in a family business is not all cakes and buttercups. Even though we have our fair shares of smiles, it can be a little tough sometimes. And I've wondered why has my family stayed together throughout the generations? And even after we left Venezuela and we could have all gone our separate ways because we sold our main company in Venezuela, our cousins and I decided very conscientiously that we were going to stay together and we were going to invest together in the United States and we were going to invest in an operating business and not stay as just an investment family office type. So we did go through a lot of soul searching. And I think in the end, it was something quite simple. We realized that we're stronger together than apart. We believe in growing through the trials and tribulations and the joy ways and happiness of working together, of getting to know each other. We believe in the power of groups. And most importantly, we believe that we balance each other out. My strengths are my cousin's weaknesses. His weaknesses are my strength. And we really realize that in our group, we just have a set, we have a chemistry that we can put together to the use of our community and of our families, and that inspired us to stay together.
And was any of that inspiration and some of those elements part of starting the foundation and going one step farther? What's the objective of that foundation, La Campaña
Oh,
Humana?
for sure. We are a Venezuelan family, and we started this foundation in Venezuela in 2002. And the idea was to invest in people and support them to lift themselves up. People that were really giving their best in adverse circumstances, but really wanted to improve their lot and improve their community. You do your work, and we're going to invest in you. And it's been, it's not a theory, a philosophy that has really helped us out, especially in the Venezuela of today, where you find people, groups, communities that are really working hard in incredibly adverse circumstances. They don't want a handout. They don't want you to take care of them. They just need support to be able to do what they need to do in their communities. And we provide that for them. So we have a community center. We built a music school because we realized that music has an incredible power to inspire and move people forward. We also give scholarships to talented Venezuelans to go to top universities, mostly in Venezuela. And recently, we partnered up with a world-renowned Venezuelan pianist, Gabriela Montero, to give scholarships to Venezuelan musicians that really have a chance of making it internationally. So we are currently fundraising and working together with our people to invest in individuals and in communities that really want to lift themselves up.
It sounds like a very effective and very life-changing organization. I just want to turn the sort of the my questions, now to your background as a and a proponent of all things education. You're your family's education champion, and I wanted to know what some of your thoughts were on why do you think it's important for individuals to continue learning? We hear about this lifelong learning all the time, and with regard to other members of the family group, is that something that you've got thoughts on?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's essential. Essential. Let me stress that again. Essential for the survival of the group and for the sanity of the individual. The sanity, your mental sanity, absolutely important to invest in your education. I realize that many times we think things are difficult and it's simply because we just don't know how to do them or we don't have the knowledge. And many times the knowledge is readily available. And in our case, and I've learned this from our own family, my own personal experience, and working with other families, that the more you learn together as a family and you're all manage the same concepts, the same understandings, the same language, the easier it is for us to solve problems, to move forward, to overcome challenges. And interestingly, I also discovered that the more you actually want to work together, you learn together, you work together, you see each other in different environments. So I think it's absolutely essential that you have a continuous learning process.
And with regard to, obviously you're a very enthusiastic person, and this is part of your DNA. I mean, there must be some members of the family that are less interested. How do you get them on board? How do you sort of incentivize them, as it were? And before you answer that question, I just want to put out a quick reminder to our audience to not forget to use the chat function to send in questions to Veronica, and we'll do our best to get through them during the webinar. So yeah, with regard to some of the less interested individuals that you might have come across in your family, what do you do to sort of help them along?
Well, not gonna lie to you, this is a challenge. It's not easy. We have been facing this issue since I can remember, because obviously, we're fourth generation. We have family members that are interested in all sorts of things. Some are not interested in the business at all. Some are interested. And I've learned that there is no pat answer. There's no ready available answer, as much as I've desperately tried to look for it or find it. In our case, and what I've seen with other families, is that we have to treat it as a case by case, and then as a group. So for example, recently we have a family member that's very bright and has very unconventional thinking, sees life, sees family, sees your business totally out of the box. Some might even say he's out there. I personally think he's brilliant. And it's sometimes difficult for us that are in the day-to-day to relate to this very unconventional thinking. So we were really grappling, because he has expressed to us that he wants to contribute, he wants to participate, and we've been really grappling with how to bring him in. So I was consulting with Joe Astrakhan, who some of you may know.
Sure.
And we were really thinking, okay, how can we address this? And he said something really interested. He said, ask him, first of all, identify what are his needs in wanting to participate, and then ask him, where do you see that you add value? So it's not coming from, where does Veronica think he adds value, and where am I going to fit him in my organization, but from his perspective, where does he think he is going to add value? And through the process, start a conversation. I have a little defect, tiny little defect, that I want to solve things pretty now. I want my answer. But sometimes you just don't get them, and you have to work through the process and work through the person to really find a long-term solution rather than a quick fix. So I don't know if that answered your question, but.
No, it does, and it's sort of interesting segue into my next question in terms of, the family learning part. Obviously you're the champion. Is family learning part of your overall strategic planning? Is it formalized in that way?
Yes. We were incredibly fortunate, because our elders, when they created our structure and they created our trust, they created an education fund. And so they had the conscience of the importance of education, and that all family members have the same level of education, have access to it for us to be a thriving entrepreneurial family. So we have a formal education fund. That education fund was endowed 10 years ago. It has its own structure. We developed its own set of rules and manual application form, and it has an education committee that oversees it. So from there, we have a budget allocated. So we have two different types of education. One is university and postgraduate studies, which is for the younger generation, and the other is for people that want to do continuous learnings, or for our top executives. So what we do is that we'll set, for example, this year, what are we going to do this year, this new fiscal year? Are we going to do a workshop? Where do we want to do the workshop in? Are we going to do it in-house? Or are we sending family members to external? Like, what are the skill set that we need to develop? And based on that, we will develop our plan, and then we will get the funding for it.
So you allocate budget towards both individual and both collective learning, and do you learn as a group as well? Because you mentioned the university fund and the endowed funds allocated, but do you go on group arrangements where everybody's learning?
Absolutely. Yeah? That's one thing that I would highly recommend to any family, is that if you have the opportunity to send minimum two people, if you can send three or four, depending on the size of your family, but the more people that you can send, the better. We have learned, because you learn to speak the same language. I think for us, and I'll give you a quick example, in 2015, five members of my generation, my sister, me, and three cousins, we all did the EMBA in Kennesaw State University, which was family business masters, and that's the one we did with George Manners and Joe Astor. And it was five of us. And I think that was a real turning point in our family, because we learned together. And most interestingly is that we learned how to learn together and problem solve, whereas I noticed that when we were in a work environment, sometimes we want to prevail or show that we know or we want to perform. But when you're in a classroom environment, you just want to get the problem and work together to solve it. So we took some of that experience we had in the classroom, or that attitude, and applied it to our work, and it has been really transformational. So yes, I highly recommend it.
You've almost answered my next question to you in terms of, you know, the how, because I think of the before and after. You know, when you went into this particular course and then came out, what are some of the key points that you could remember that you would highlight in terms of like how learning improves in individual or collective performances in a family enterprise? Any thoughts, any additional thoughts there?
Well, I think, like, for me, and I'll repeat myself a little bit, but this was such a huge realization for me. Maybe for some of you listening, it might be quite obvious, but it wasn't for me until I lived it, was that difference in attitude of learning how to learn to get together and work through problems, as opposed to trying to prove who is right or who knows more. Maybe we're cousins, we're South Americans, we're Venezuelans, we're hot-blooded, you know. The one that speaks with the loudest voice prevails. And when we were in the classroom, our attitude when we were in the learning environment was to, okay, how are we going to fix this? How are we going to figure this out? It wasn't to perform. And I think that for us was absolutely key. And for us, again, to manage the same concepts. We all felt we shared the same level of knowledge. We learned about family dynamics. We learned about finance. We learned about all these concepts that maybe we didn't manage before, but when we talked about it and we spoke about it to our cousins, we're like, oh yeah, I know what you're saying. And that's because we went through this experience.
I would imagine it puts everybody on an even keel or an even platform, because you're all in there together, aren't you?
Absolutely.
I'm just going to turn our attention quickly to a couple of questions that have come in from the listeners, from the viewers, and there's one I'll just read to you. It's about time, and so it goes like this: what time allocation does it take for a family learning champion, somebody like you, to encapsulate or understand the aspiration of all members? Part-time, full-time, how is it valued or how does the family or compensated by the family? So quite a loaded question there, but there's a lot of interesting detail.
No, it's a fascinating question, so I'll break it down a bit. In our case, like, because we have this education committee, we get paid through the education committee. This is the current result. This wasn't always like this. For a very long time, we were trying to figure it out, so we weren't compensated. We were setting things up. And then after a while, when we realized, wow, this does take up a lot of time, we decided to give it compensation. And it all, so that's part one in terms of the compensation. Then the other part as to how long it takes, it really depends upon how big is your family. In my case, we're 17 in my generation. And the eldest is 54, the youngest is 13. So as you can see, our education needs are all over the place. And I don't know how long it took, but I can tell you that it was a long time, because it was a process. It wasn't, it was like a day-to-day issue. As we worked together and as we started and through trial and error, we worked through all the different issues, educational needs that we were coming up, things that we were facing in the family. And so, for example, I'll give you an example. Maybe this will help you out.
Yeah.
So when we had the generational transition, we found ourselves fourth generation with the family council on our hands and with a series of structures that worked very well for siblings, which were my father and our uncles. They had a sibling partnership, but we were a cousin consortium. And once the family council was in our power, we realized, wow, we have no, these structures that worked so well when our uncles were in power are not working for us. So we had to start a process of educating ourselves within, well, what is a family council for a cousin consortium? What do we need to change? How are we going to do this? What do we want our family council to do now, given the current characteristics of our family? And so we started a process of going to workshops, learning, reading, finding books. And the way I did it was I structured it out. We talked with all family members. What difficulties are you facing? What do you think we need to change? Summarized it, made a list, made a process, went through a search process, selected the people we thought we were going to help us, and carefully executed that. And that whole process from beginning to end took us about a year and a half.
Oh. That's surprising, but not surprising at the same time, because these things do take time, and if you want to do it right, you've got to be patient, I suppose. We have another. It's more of a comment than a question, but it's from Julius Frolik. He says the family that learns together stays together. Very uplifting message, and I was just wondering if you had any thoughts on that particular comment.
Well, I absolutely agree. I think I don't really have anything more to add rather than yes, a very enthusiastic yes. Family that learns together stays together. I think it's hugely important that the family take it very seriously, that the family fund the efforts, that the family designate a person responsible, that the family give it the seriousness it requires, because it will give you a foundation and it will bring you together as family members. Like I said, I like my cousins more now than I did before.
Well, it's interesting, and it sort of fits nicely with my next question in terms of, you know, whether or not it's kind of a scenario question here. How would you have thrived as an entrepreneurial family without continuous learning? Do you think you would be where you are now had you done things differently, or, you know, not taken such a strong interest in this notion of educating themselves as individuals, as a collective unit, and moving forward?
Oh man. I don't think we would have been able to do it or to survive. You know, leaving Venezuela, going to a new country like the United States, that's like super tough, being 17 cousins, changing nationalities. I mean, I think that had we not had this, and again, I really am very grateful to our elders who really instilled this to us, said, you guys, get the tools you need, because it is a tough, tough world. You're going to face huge challenges, both external and internal, because sometimes it's not only the competition that's tough. Sometimes the worst enemy is your internal family dynamics that you need to sort through. And if we had not done a lot of the work of understanding our family dynamics, of understanding why we needed to adapt our rules, our family council, our structure, of why, what were our difficulties in communication, in problem solving, et cetera, I don't think we'd probably have made that decision to stay together and give it a shot in the United States. So I think as an entrepreneurial family, learning together is an absolute pillar of us.
You just used the words adapt and being dynamic. You seem like individuals and a collective family that likes to do things differently, and that's part of my question. Is learning to do things differently a concept that is accepted in your family? And it seems like you've just answered that question anyway. Were there any sort of outliers who wanted to do things the old-fashioned way, or we've always done it this way, or is it sort of the opposite?
Oh, for sure. We were all over that spectrum from 1 to 100. We had people at 100 of we've got it radically different, and people at 1 saying, but we've always done it this way. And we had to work through that. We had to work through all these different, you know, because sometimes learning to do things differently produces fear, right? It's scary. Mm-hmm. You know, not exactly sure what you're going to get. But doing it as before, you know what you're going to get, and it's not what you want. So you got to take that risk.
But sometimes there's pleasant surprises, right? I've got another question, Veronica, that's just come in from one of our viewers. How do you keep the family bonding, or how do you overcome the distance, given that you seem to have family members on all continents? So how do you get the glue to work when you're spread out?
Oh, that is such a great question. Thank you for asking it. Yes, we have family members all over the place. You know, we went from being all of us in Venezuela. We had our headquarters and we had the offices for our different countries on different floors in our one building. And I would just go up and down the elevator to meet my different cousins in the different companies. And they would come up to the 13th floor, which was our family office. And so we went from there to being spread out everywhere. And there's a few things we do. Our family council meets monthly, except in the months of August and December, where we take breaks. So we have monthly family councils meetings, and we do those on Skype. So people that are in our two main offices in Venezuela and in Miami, they will go to those offices, and the rest of the people connect on Skype. And that has been hugely important for us because it gives us space to talk. Then we all kind of have a hub in Miami, Florida. So we all fly in during the summer and we spend a lot of time together. We have a lot of activities. Right now in August, we're having our next gen activities together. And we will do workshops, not only for getting hard skill set like accounting or whatever it is that we need, but also for working communication issues or softer side or conflict issues or whatever. And then we'll do fun activities where we just go and have a great time and we dance and we just have a blast.
You sound like a terrific family, both professionally and socially. Obviously, you're the learning champion in the family, but your family seems very, very receptive to lifelong and continuous learning. You know, you're the locomotive pulling everybody. Do you have any tips that you could offer other family enterprises that perhaps are not on the same path yet, but who are listening now, who you know, what would you recommend in terms of getting them going on a learning journey?
Well, first I would wonder who within your family wants to do this, designate a person mm-hmm. or a group of people that would be responsible for this, that genuinely enjoy it. Then you decide and within your family and depending on what structures you have or you don't have, whether you pay or you don't pay, or that's something that you would have to determine within your family conditions. Then once you get that started, then you get your people started on talking to identify what it is that you want to learn, what it is that you're interested, what it is that you think you're lacking. And then you schedule it. You say, okay, you identify, well, we want to learn, I don't know, better communication, or we want to learn conflict resolution or whatever yeah. it is, family dynamics. And then you can identify, do a search, ask people you know, ask me, because I have a lot of experience. I've done a lot of research, and I could tell you there's a lot of information out there. And then you learn to be able to identify the good from the bad. And then once you kind of said, okay, we want to work with such people, we want to do this type of workshop, then you create a plan. You say, you know, we're going to gather, you give it sufficient time in advance, you talk to your group to see when their schedules are available. And I would recommend doing something where you have like a formal workshop and then just a fun gathering, so people remember why you like to be with each other, so that you get to know yourselves not only as a family that works together but as family members. And then as you move on and you become a little bit more formalized or more structured, then you can start preparing a plan. And then depending on your size, eventually you can do in-house workshops, or you can start sending more than a few family members to workshop. So I would take it step by step. Ask questions, identify what are the topics you want to learn, when are people available, identify who you want to do it with, and then take it from there, one step at a time.
Wow, it sounds like It's obviously that you've thought this through, and it's more than obvious that you're the learning champion in your family. Any final thoughts? We're running out of time here. We've got a minute left. Any final thoughts or any final sort of messages or anecdotes that you want to leave our listeners and viewers with today, in terms of you know, how you got from point A to where you are now, and why lifelong learning in a family enterprise is so fulfilling.
You know, looking back at where I am now, I started in 2002. And I was young and naive, and you look back, and then I was like, it's all worth it. Your learning journey, like, you see your family, you see what you've done, you see what you've built. It's a process. And so I definitely recommend any family that's thinking about this, it's worth the effort. Even if you don't know what the result's going to be, just do it. Go for it. I absolutely think it's absolutely worth the effort to just do it and try it out.
Just a quick question to our producer, Tom. Do we have any more questions for our audience, or we're going to wrap it up? Okay, well, listen, Veronica, it's been a real pleasure talking to you today. Thank you to our listeners for joining us today for BFF Live, and thank you, Veronica, for your time and your insight. Don't forget to visit businessfamilies.com for details on our next webinar. Thanks a lot for joining us, everybody. Have a great day.
Thank you. Bye.